Oh, yeah. Hello again, everybody.
There are many type of pies.
Yeah?
There's shepherd's pie.
He's coming to puke. He's gonna puke. He's gonna puke. He's...
Pumpkin pie.
Sweet potato pie.
You could see it.
Apple pie.
Oh my God!
Pie. That's what I want.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
Ah, yes. Just when you thought you couldn't take it any longer, just when you thought that it was never going to happen, we're back after a 2-week hiatus. Paid in Exposure is back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Wayne, and hope everybody had a good 4th of July, right? That's happened since the last time Paid in Exposure was on. And, you know, I'm going to tell you this every time, but in case you're brand new, never listened, don't listen to this podcast specifically for breaking news. I'm probably never going to have very much breaking news for you. Not to say that, you know, that can't happen. But you're definitely going to hear more opinions, recaps, and reviews. And, man, in the case of today's interview with Effie, a lot of curse words. A couple trigger words before that. If you're sensitive to any LGBT things, or if you're from the South, I guess, because apparently that's kind of a thing, sadly, in 2018. Effie and I get into I feel like it's a really good conversation. There's no, I don't think there's any reason to be angry, but as he mentions, somebody probably will find a reason. Please don't find a reason. That's not the intention. It's never, ever going to be my intentions with anybody on the show. But the end of the podcast gets a little heated. I actually ran my very first poll on Twitter because I was kind of worried about airing this after kind of realizing that Effie was upset just a little more than I thought he was going to be going into the interview. 100% of the 15 people that voted said that we should air this. So you're probably all listening right now. Thank you to all 15 of you. Please share this with your friends. Let's try and make it 16 or 17 people by the time this gets around and has been out for a little while. Since last time, there's been a lot of things that have gone on. We'll start with locally, I guess, and what pertains to what has been going on with, me as it relates to wrestling, because that's kind of what we're here for, right? Summer Bash was, it was interesting in Memphis, and then we had Sir Mo was there. A lot of you may remember him from WWF. He was a tag team champion with Men on a Mission. Mabel with his tag partner, or Viscera, Big Daddy V. I think he had a couple of other names. I'm not really sure. He was in attendance, and a lot of other guys, a lot of local wrestlers were there. Hunter Havoc was heavily featured. Anton LaVey, who is a wrestler, not probably the Anton LaVey some of you might be thinking of, and a lot of other people. Depending on who you ask, these were either qualified wrestlers or terrible wrestlers, unfortunately. I thought, from everybody I heard from, I thought the show went really well. I didn't get to watch a lot of it. Everything I heard sounded really good. There's like this thing in wrestling where like, it's sometimes said as a joke, but I've never said it unless I'm in it. But people say that if they don't get to watch your match, like, oh, I heard it. It sounded good. And a lot of people say that just to kind of get away from not having to say anything bad about their friends or to hurt anybody's feelings. But as some of you probably know, or you will soon learn, I don't mind hurting people's feelings if it's the truth. Not to be mean and vindictive and just say mean things for the sake of saying them, but if it relates to advice or something that somebody wants to know to improve themselves, then it's hard for me to sugarcoat things. I've never been one to really know how to do that, I guess, from always growing up around wrestling and having, you know, being in a locker room with men that were in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and older or younger than any of that, always fuck with me because I was just a little kid in the locker room that they could do that to. So I guess that was kind of my childhood, was not knowing how to sugarcoat things and always being rough around the edges. And it's kind of something I've worked on. And at times, I guess it doesn't really work that well because people tend to get upset about it. But everything I heard from Summer Bash, I didn't really hear a lot of dead crowds or a lot of booing when they just wanted the match to end and not when they were supposed to. And then I found out later that the match I was in actually caused a lot of problems, which, again, that's, I guess, nothing new. I was booked to wrestle a death match, which, thanks to Ian Rotten and IWA, is something that I always thought I would be scared to do, is because of them, has become kind of a comfort zone, oddly enough, in the course of the last, 8 months or so. And the death match, I thought, was extremely short, considering there were 5 people in it, and it could have been better, it could have been worse. I've had a lot of people say that it was really good, and then come to find out, the biggest issue from anybody in the entire building was the fact that I somehow disrespected the ring, because it turns out one of the guys in the match, he owned the ring. And if you were on the Facebook Live thing that happened, by now it's been a couple of weeks, but it happened after the event. The short story version of it is there was a spot where I gave a DVD to one of the guys through a bundle of light tubes set between 2 chairs. And that was very disrespectful to the man that owned the ring who was in the match, because I guess he thought that somehow you're not supposed to have dangerous things in a match that's called a fucking death match. I don't know. I don't understand that either. I'm sure some of you are laughing and shaking your head because I did the exact same thing. And it turns out that supposedly this guy beat me up 11 years ago when I started wrestling. I don't remember this. If anybody has footage of me getting beat up when I was 20, then I would love to see that, because I would remember getting my ass beat in a wrestling ring especially. And this guy, apparently he only got booked because he owned the ring. It's evident that that was the only reason why he was booked, because he did the finish when nobody saw it and nobody knew what happened. So appreciate it. Thank you. If anybody's listening that thinks the match could have gone better, don't blame me. I've had a couple of people actually ask me why the match was so short. That's why the match was short. It was nobody's fault but his own. Even though I laid the match out for everybody multiple times, because there were multiple people in the match, and somehow it went extremely short. But I've had a lot of people say that it was one of their favorite matches on the show. There was another incident coming out of it where a guy said that the promoter didn't pay him. T-Shawn was the promoter, a friend of Peyton Exposure, who did an interview a few weeks before the show. And everything that I talked to him about, that I've heard through the grapevine that is pro wrestling, he's followed through on. I haven't seen anything that would make me think he's been shady about anything. I think the misunderstanding came in where it was T-Shawn's idea to have people sell tickets, like the wrestlers and anybody else that wanted to sell tickets, as a way to make additional money in addition to the payoff they were getting for wrestling. And Tishon would get a percentage or a certain amount of the ticket price. So the wrestler that was upset about this apparently thought he was going to get paid because he was just selling tickets just to help out, not because he can make money off of that. And so the thing with selling tickets is that's usually, I guess, by some people looked at to be like beneath them that they should sell tickets because that's what students do and that's what backyard wrestlers do. Or not really sure what the stigma is, because when I promoted events a few years ago, I had no problem selling tickets to people. When people have asked me to help them sell tickets because it was somewhere local to where I was going to be or somewhere that I'd been before, I didn't have a problem doing that. Because the more people you have there, the more chances you and everyone else has to sell merchandise, the bigger the crowd in the venue is going to be, which can get you to a bigger venue. I had almost a dozen people come to Summer Bash that bought tickets from me, and I got paid for that, and still bought merchandise, and still want to come back, and still plan on coming back when they run again September 1st. So if you want to complain about money, and this is a general statement away from Summer Bash, but if your idea of complaining about money is over $30 or $40, then maybe you shouldn't wrestle. Maybe you should not even complain about it if it's going to be that big of a deal. Now, if there's an extenuating circumstance over it, then that's different. But if your agreed amount that you're getting paid to wrestle is not a substantially large amount, and you're not paid that amount because you misunderstood what the agreement was, that falls back on you. It doesn't fall back on the promoter. It doesn't fall back on anybody else but you, because you're the one that agreed to either get paid this very, very low amount or not get paid at all. You agreed to sell tickets. You agreed to help this promotion, and you failed to do so because you didn't have enough people willing to support you to buy tickets, then that doesn't fall on anybody else's shoulders but your own. So I was very happy with the turnout at Summer Bash. I scared a little girl that was probably maybe 7 or 8 years old. Her name was Ava. I met her during intermission. She was scared when the light tubes exploded and some of the glass went up in the air. On the video, it looks like it hit them. Nothing happened. I talked to her family. I talked to her. She was completely fine, just scared, I guess, because the light tubes did explode about 6 or 7 feet in front of her. For me personally, that was the scariest moment of the entire match, was thinking that this little girl was hurt, because I saw her jump off the front row, and I'm assuming her dad pull her over to a different part of the building to continue watching and everything. And she was scared to talk to me when I came out to find her, to talk to her, make sure everything was okay. But before it was over, she was smiling and happy, and mom and family and everybody was happy. So it turned out the only person that was upset in all of Summer Bash was the guy that owned the ring, because I don't know. And then the guy that didn't understand how he was supposed to get paid. But you know, sometimes you get paid in cash, sometimes you get paid in exposure. So what do I know? But, you know, we're going to take a break real quick. The interview with Effie is going to be up next, and we'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned. The day of the lies, the
break it into. I was down, but now I can see. like pro wrestling shirts, I got a really cool company for you. Go to Mentho Brand Tees on Twitter and Instagram. Give them a follow. Pick up a shirt. They got hoodies, hats, aprons. They got all kinds of stuff. They got some badass designs. You need to go to Mentho Brand Tees. That's M-E-M-F-O Brand Tees. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram and pick something up now. And if you don't live in the U.S., that's cool. They ship worldwide. Go to shop.spreadshirt.com/Mempho, M-E-M-F-O. Pick up something now. Get on Twitter. Get on Instagram. Give them a follow. Mempho Brand T.
Yeah, I hit speaker because, you know, why not hit? Man, I really appreciate you coming on the show. We've already been talking for like forever, so I thought I should record, but.
Yeah, man, get it on the line. Make sure everybody.
I know, man. Like, we've already talked for a lot about things, so I figured. One thing we didn't talk about, what's like one of your first memories from wrestling? Like, kind of got you hooked on.
I've always told people my dad was such a like Crockett PA guy. He never let on that, you know, or there was anything about it. And it was like, you saw those guys or you watched that. They were legit tough guys. Totally was running good. They were really winning these belts. This was real stuff. But they were really having these fights. So for the longest time, I grew up on. Even I remember, like, I'm young, and I remember watching these stuff. And for the longest time, I thought the NWO was a real gang. Like a legitimate, like, the police would be after them gang. Like, right. What are they going to do? Did they kill Rey Mysterio? Like, is this serious? So it was, the kayfabe was strong in my, and I didn't even get into these stuff until, you know, way down the line. I kind of drug my dad to him take me. And I think there was a night in Greenville, South Carolina. I grew up in for a while where Flair got a shot at championship and he took me that night. And we sat in those nosebleeds and it was like Ric Flair appreciation night. And, you know, they tore it up, had a old school match for the belt. That was a really cool live wrestling to be a part of. And especially at that age.
So like when you saw the NWO, did you know, since you didn't watch a lot of WWE, did you know like who Scott Hall was, or like these were just random guys that were in a gang?
No. Yeah. I mean, I had no clue. I didn't know anything about Razor Ramon. I didn't know a kid. And these guys causing them were taking over. And it really, right. I mean, it just felt like a legitimate threat to me. And that was in the time where like hanging out with some older kids and they're not like you either. Like, holy moly, these are the real tough dudes out there. These are the dudes who are not living by anybody else's rules, but their own. It kind of makes you that rebellious kid, and it makes it cool. You're like, oh, man, I'm good.
Right. Yeah, you're part of the club. Good.
Yeah.
Once you saw the match with Lair, was that right long after that you decided you wanted to do this? Or is this like you just kept like still a fan? Like how long after that did you start like looking to get into it?
You know, even watching it every week, sitting in my room, and I got you. I didn't have cable, so I'd watch SmackDown a lot. It was on that kind of time period. I never even considered they'd be a wrestler. I mean, in my opinion, it was something where you go to a factory and they've kind of created guys here and they're just pumping them out. You know, regular people don't ever step into that.
Like a monster factory.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Monster factory. Right. Yeah. You know, it's not one of those things like, oh, yeah, normally go train and become wrestlers. Man, right. They just find these guys from birth set up for, and that's what you're going to be as a wrestler. And you're, you know, pretty much set on that path from you're born. It wasn't until much later that I kind of had that, like, oh, people, you start watching more independent, you start watching more old school wrestling. Okay, some of these are just regular dudes who definitely, you know, have just made their way into the ring. You know, they're not your Heidenreich and they're not your Earthquake dude, you know?
Yeah. What was one of like the first independents?
Honestly, the first independent I ever went to was when I was real young. I lived on a marine. My dad ran a box department, so he wasn't actually a military. And as part of one of their like fairs there, they had indie wrestling. And I'm sure it was no names and no guys, but like I was ready for it. I was in the building. I got all this to sign my hat. You know, I thought it was a thing ever, like a stars. And now I kind of look back on it. Oh, man, that's the man now when there's like a 6-year-old kid at or a little family walking up where, you know, there's no concept of, oh, this might just be a regular guy. He might work during the week and come out on the weekend and when he shows. This is like he's a wrestler. Having that kind of cool and rewarding and really from the other side.
A lot of like kids and fans going to kind of remind you of where you were when the way they look at you, you kind of looked at the other independent wrestlers.
Dude, exactly. And one of the big things, you know, I'm a kind of wild guy and the people who are familiar with, I can be a little excessive, over the top, a little feminine, you know, seeing the parents come up with these kids. Because I'm an over-the-top character. I'm wild. I'm a comic book. The kids come up and they want to meet, and the parents are kind of hesitant. You can always tell with the dad's coming up or the mom's coming up that they're like, I don't know if my kid be meeting this wrestler. Like, let's go meet this wrestler here, but I don't know if you go talk to the guy in fishnets and a sparkle jacket. But
exactly.
Kids are, like, drawn. And for as much, like, adult-oriented stuff, and I like to tell people, Effie can work your family show. Effie can be a babyface at a family show or a heel at a family show and fit in fine G-rated culture, you
right.
know, as much as possible. And kids just kind of see that, and they see the bright colors, the flashy, ridiculous in the ring, and I'm talking a lot of trash, and they just want to come be a part of it. So, you know, when that dad hands over $10 to buy a necklace, you can kind of see that heartbreak a little bit, but it's what the kids want. What are you going to do? You can't just leave the kid hanging.
Exactly. So before you had the sparkly, you found some train. What was your training? Was it like an independent show you went to and found somebody?
So I think I have one of the weirdest heard so far in listening to everybody else's. In some ways, it's put me in an – in some ways, it's put me in a – I used to drink a lot. And when I say drugs, I mean anything I could get my hands on. And I had a moment of sobriety where I had a lot of – and I ended up, you know, going to rehab, being more open with myself. And I had met a guy previously, one of the, like, indie spot shows, because I'd just get high as I could. I'd go watch wrestling. I thought it was great. Still not concerned. Oh, you this too. This guy helped me get my car started in the parking lot and signed an 8x10 was White Trash Fred.
Okay.
And he said, if you ever want to follow your dreams, man, come follow your. So, I mean, that's the only place I had to look at. I didn't know about the rest of Florida. I didn't know about these legitimates. So I was driving out an hour and a half every. He had a ring set up in the middle of Florida. And for eight months I would do, and different guys would come out. They'd help me learn more stuff. Different people would show up. We'd run different drills. And you get to a certain point and you're like, okay, I'm really comfortable with a lot of the basics, but when I'm bringing up more of the complicated, I'm studying matches, I don't think this guy's on that level, and that's okay, but I've got to kind of get out there and this out. So I really started BSing my way into getting booked, you know, probably a little early, should, but you sort of learn out there really fast with guys. You know, here's what I'm comfortable with, here's what we can do, and figuring stuff out, and showing up early to the show, and just getting in the ring with, and even learning, you know, you learn your drills out there in the field, but these guys have better drills that they've learned from real actual wrestlers that have trained with Jay Lee, have trained with these names, and you kind of follow, figure out, you see how much of it can copy and So it was a really interesting, it was working a lot of shows, you know, real trashy, but you meet somebody at a show, you get a booking at another show, you know, you get another experience to learn from somebody else. So it was kind of half training out in the field and half like training on the job.
Do you feel like you're accepted as quickly, or were you still kind of looked at as a guy that trained with White Trash Fred?
I think it was a little confusing for everybody because, you know, most people at these shows know each other through, oh, who trained you? Oh, what class did you with? And I kind of showed up out of the blue. So I didn't have... Oh yeah, my train from here. It was like, where's Effie coming? Who is Effie? How is Effie? You know, who brought him here? Where did you exist out of? So there was a mystery that I think some people sort of like were almost afraid to ask too many questions because I was obviously in the ring at this. I was picking up a lot of because I was pretty outlandish, pretty wild. Had a background in a rap group, doing all kinds of ridiculous stuff. So I knew how to get people entertained. And once they saw that I could proficiently wrestle enough and get through things, and you know. Not all the matches are great, but some of the matches are sometimes you really click. And so the mystery of like, he didn't train with me and he didn't train with me. Where'd this dude come from? It almost helped me in this because a lot of these guys who trained, some of the problem, they never get outside of those little shows that they're allowed to do. You know, the trainer says, okay, I can bring in my carload for 200, keeps 100, pays everybody 10 bucks. And that's the only show they get to, that's the show they were allowed. You know? I didn't have that. And if I could convince a booker to bring me in, it was all on me. And if I failed, it was all on me. Seated. There wasn't anybody else taking the credit, really.
So were you Effie from the thing, or did how? Because so you said you did a lot of drugs. I'm going to backtrack for just a second.
For sure.
When you mentioned it, I want to go back to that, just if that's okay with you. If
100%.
Okay. So I've watched some of your videos. Pretty sure that anybody listening has watched a bunch of your videos. Like you kind of feel like you're on LSD watching a few of the different. So that like it's awesome you've gotten, but. It's had an effect that I think has helped transition into creativity a little bit. Was Effie like something that started off initially wearing fishnets, or was this like a slow evolution thing over the course of the last year?
Yeah, so this is a good two-parter. I'm going to get into both parts. So I was from, and I took that name, the biblical Ephra, translates to bearing much fruit. And, you know, I was thinking of the word effeminate, and I was thinking about feminine qualities. And obviously, it's a big heel move from back in the for you to be a little anonymous, a little homosexual, a little wild. And as I was sort of coming into my own comfort, coming to terms with my real sexuality, getting out of the drug world, having to actually be myself, not being able to hide from myself or hide from anybody else, it was sort of its own version of therapy. But you know what? I'm going to get out in front of people who absolutely hate me for being public and open and LGBT. And use that to my advantage, feed off their hate. And so it wasn't even looked at as a positive, just a way for me, let me get through and let me figure this out and let me figure out who I am. And the best way for me to do that was to target them and say, you know what? I'm the bad boy and you can come fight me because you think I'm gay, or you can fight me because I'm a bad boy with terrible stuff. But as I sort of started molding myself to it, I found people coming up to me and saying, wow, you can put up with people's hate. You've got comebacks. You're throwing guys around. I'm a bigger guy than I, you know, when I come out and I'm with the fishnets on and I've got the jacket on and I'm sauntering around, I think people forget a little bit. You know, I'm 6'1", I'm 220, I'm a big boy. So
yeah,
when they can make that assumption about, oh, this little feminine boy, he's probably going to do a kiss spot and a little dance spot. And then I start locking in and throwing punches and throwing guys around. It's sort of like, oh God, like this is a big badass. And we kind of underestimate.
New version of Adrian Street, except he was married to Miss Linda and everyone thought he could get in there to shit out of everybody. So it's
exactly.
Almost like the new version of Adrian Street. It's like what they wanted to do with Rico, but it didn't work.
Yeah. And it's cool. Odd because I think there's sort of, especially now with as they are, there's sort of a little kickback from people in public, especially in the about, okay, are you a heteronormative person portraying an LGBT character? They get really uncomfortable in ways that they didn't. And so now I can go, okay, you know what? I can be it. I can play off my sexuality, and that's actually who I am. And there's an honesty to that, that people still have their hate. I still get, you know, especially Georgia, Alabama, you still get some, but people see it and they go, okay, he's catty, he's sexual. I had somebody at one of the bigger tryouts said, oh, well, and he's too over the top and he's a stereotype. For me, that's where I get to myself, all of that ring wrestling. I can wear little fits. I can wear sparkly stuff. I can act overly gay. I got a regular person. And during the time I'm in the ring, man, I can go all out.
I really kind of just for a second because it might be a subject. When I talked to Francisco Chiazzo, he wouldn't stop talking about it, but I'd only seen videos. I'd only, like you're telling me, a way for you to express yourself. If you were, I had to ask him, like, so it's not just a gimmick. He was like, no. And he started going off about everything. But I guess the question was with how your sexuality, I'm trying not to be offended.
You know, it's not me. A little more, I'll use the right words. It can be a little much to try to navigate.
Even though I'm from the South, I've dealt with the same like Alabama, Georgia stuff, and like people in the South do look a lot different. I think traveling and being around pro wrestling my entire life, even though I'm from the South, like none of that stuff bothers me. I try to think of other people. I guess what I'm getting at is like, have you had problems besides with fans, other wrestlers, because of how you use yourself and them knowing what your lifestyle is or your sexuality, not knowing that it's not just.
I think, and you're probably not, and we'll get back to. You know, the way it was sort of looked at in the locker room, I found in a very odd way, guys who understood what I was doing knew it was for biz, it was good for character. But there was a lot of guys who, when they're in the locker room, their girlfriends are and their wives aren't. They're not around most of their around. It's a comfort zone. They feel more comfortable in the locker room. And I think, you know, some people who may have had inclinations of a certain way or may have felt some way and never had a way to express it sort of felt drawn to me. Obviously, I'm out in the open. I'm not hiding anything. It's not a mystery. You know, I got my ass pinched a lot more. I got, you know, slaps on the butt. I got, you know, kind of flirted with a lot more by these guys who were seemingly outwardly heterosexual who would find a little comfort in, hey, well, I can let this little side of myself out in secret back here and nobody's going to care because it's Effie, because I'm just talking to Effie. And you saw a lot of the guys not even hating, but sort of like finding this new version of themselves where it was they felt okay themselves around me. And so, I mean, in a way, that's good. In a way, it's like, I'm not your plaything. I've been in a monogamous relationship for like over 2 years. So like back up a little bit, some space. But even with promoters, you know, I've had some for me to tone it or whatever. I always tell people, look, if you need Effie to work clean, Effie works clean. I can work PG. I can work G shows. I can work family shows. I can be a real bad heel and not have to sing really offensive or not have to do anything offensive and still get the point across, or be a baby face and get the point across where, you know, expected me to be able to get over there, especially with families or audience. But I have had certain promoters, you know, try to use their advantage. And, you know, just what's the language code on this podcast?
You can say whatever the fuck you
want. Okay. And I feel this is a jump word for a lot of people. I had a promoter legitimately tell me to faggot. Hey, could you faggot up for me?
Wow.
And I told him, the faggot up price is double my rate. And he paid it. So I walked out there in rings and dancing and overdoing it because at the end of the day, buddy, we got to get paid.
Exactly.
You're going to double my rate. I'll do whatever you need. Is that, you know, is that me playing up to the stereotype? But were we also in bumfuck Alabama? Yeah. People get offended.
It sounds like it's
got
to be an Alabama promoter to say something that.
Yeah. 100.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, it's, it's definitely garnered reactions, but not necessarily expected reactions that I saw from people. And I think, I mean, people talk about privilege, you know, white privilege, straight privilege, whatever, straight passing privilege is a world. If I need to straight pass, I can. But I think they see me and they limit the hate a little, because what are they going to do to me? You're gonna come up to me in the parking lot and really try to fight me? I mean, right. I'm a big boy. I'm going to take you out. You know, you get anger issues from dealing with these people. What, I mean, you really going to come up to me and try something? They're not. They never will. They're pussies.
Yeah. Bill Dundee's son, JC Ice, have you ever met him?
We haven't met him personally.
Okay. He had one of my favorite lines. He was not a big guy, but he had a bigger mouth than anybody that got him in a lot of trouble all the time. In fact, like one of his first days, WWF, he told Ken Shamrock to come shoot on him and take his leg, messing with him. So, yeah, Jamie just didn't care about anything. And one of his favorite lines, like you're telling me about, if they're going to come fight you, going to try it. Jamie's way of getting out of fights is, so you're going to kick my ass. So you kick my little ass, then who'd you beat up? And then what's going to happen? Your ass, you got beat up by little ass me. So you really want to, like, nine times out of 10, they were like, yep, you're right. I don't like you, but I'm not going to do anything, because they, like, started thinking, oh, he probably will kick my ass.
Yeah. So. Well, same deal with me, you know, catch me with a right hook, knock me on the ground. That's a hit. What are you getting into? You know,
yeah.
You better limit those hands, man.
One of the pictures I used to promote this with Joey Ryan, and he's been real big on equality in wrestling. And I know, like, in Too Young, I'm sure you've done a lot of intergender stuff the same way he has. How do you feel about equality in wrestling? Do you feel like that's too progressive, or do you?
No, I love it, man. And you know, people started saying the thing, well, it's not intergender wrestling. And
right.
When I first started getting booked to do it, was mostly as like a kind of a sideshow attraction. The first intergender match I ever saw, and this is a show helping out, you know, doing whatever. And the whole gimmick of the match was the guy's not going to hit a girl, but she's happy to hit him. And it was really gimmicky. And
right.
The first match I got booked, I was just putting over a girl, big muscle, strong. And I was playing that cowardly heel, and I was getting a couple little things. He was really throwing me around, dominating. But now that I can have those matches where, hey, you know what? Your stuff looks good. My stuff looks good. This looks competitive. We can tell the story correctly. Everybody is comfortable with what's happening. You know, we hold those competitors to the same level. And if they can compete at the same level, why not? And especially with some of these girls, they're bigger draws than the guys are. So why would you not want to? That's going to bring people, that's going to bring money to the house, that people are excited to see. You know, my match with Sue Young has 210,000. My other matches don't have any. So
exactly.
These girls are getting people to the product. Maybe it's not always for them, but there's a lot of people see women competitors with men competitors and seeing how that works out. There's plenty of girls out there who are destroying the scene right now and who don't need to be held back by, oh, she's a girl, she's got to do this tonight. No, man, put her in the main event, unless she's got.
They, you mentioned girls being, Kylie Rae worked from Mississippi. We talked about Mississippi earlier, but, she came down there and she did a girls match, with Frankie's, fiance at the time. And it was a really good match. Just like, I think in the last month or so, her and her tag partner GPA was the main event.
They just did I think it was an I Quit match.
I think so. Yeah. I was there in October when they were still together, and it was her and Craig, I can't think of his last
name. Mitchell?
Mitchell, yep. I knew, yeah, it was on the tip of my tongue. And they were face-to-face. And I remember standing upstairs in the balcony talking to Matt Nix. He had walked off. And I don't remember. I was talking to somebody, and we stopped talking because entire freelance audience chanting, Kylie's going to kill you, to someone twice her size. And I mentioned that to Frankie. And he's like, doesn't mean it should be happening. We shouldn't be doing that. I think it's like kind of an old school Southern, never have a guy beat up a girl or never let a girl get over.
But I mean, like, there's one more older than that to trump all of it. You put your draws in the spot. People are coming to see that person. People know she can handle herself. And if she feels comfortable and he feels comfortable, what the fuck are we doing? I mean, put them in that spot. They're bringing in a lot of people. Here's one of my big problems, and I'm sure you can understand it. Wrestling fans are going to show up, right? They're going to pay, and people who like pro wrestling, that number is always, you know, your hardcore fans, it doesn't matter who you could announce a full show of a guy wrestling, they're going to show. When you can bring people in and bring a new audience in and bring a new set of eyes in who 5 years have thought about, who would have thought it was a joke, who would have thought it was racist, homophobic, and shitty to everybody, and it's not a safe place for us to go, you can bring in new fans who are LGBT, who are women, who are families, who go, you know what, we feel comfortable in this environment now because they have women, and they have gay wrestlers, and they have all types of people here. we're not going to be dealing with homophobic chants. We're not going to be dealing with racism. You know, one of the things they say at every Fest show is we will not tolerate homophobia or any kind of discrimination. In wrestling, obviously, push a lot of buttons. That's okay, but it's for something that somebody can't change, and it shouldn't be for hateful reasons, you know? I should want to beat you because you were, you know, a cheating heel, or because you took my belt, or because you hit me with a chair, not because you're black or you're gay. This woman took it's. When it comes down to the most basic, it's competitors. And what is their reason for it? It doesn't have to be anything.
I think that there's a lot of, they do look at it the way progressive, like you and Sue Young had a lot of great matches. I've seen highlight videos, and they're all really good. It's not something you would, not to say like you should expect a guy and a girl to have a certain type of match, but it stands out as something completely different. And it's an updated from a pro wrestling. It's not just like where I'm at in Memphis, we're kind of in a bubble sometimes where it should be punch and kick and yell and create the emotion that way. But you're doing so much more in every match I've seen against Joey Ryan does the same thing. The equality thing, I feel like there's time to do that now. It just should be everywhere. It shouldn't be a little pocket.
But the girls, too, are coming from a different place. They're used to having one match on the card. Here's the girls' match. 6 minutes. Go out there and have your fun. And so they've had to fight for more spots. When there's so many competitors and so many spots, they were only getting so much. And people are going, well, you know, the girls haven't progressed as much. Nobody's been giving them to progress, to go out there and have a 20-minute match, to go out there and really step toe-to-toe with really been around the block. And I think from that frustration, they sort of found this place to go, we're going to go where we're and they're going to shine.
That's one thing I love about IWA Mid-South. And for everyone that will talk bad about Ian Rotten, for one, like as soon as I met him in October, he like was asking about my personal situation, was like giving me advice and talking to me about things he didn't have to talk about. He, all right, well, you know, you go out there and have your match. Genuinely advice on your wrestling. They've been at the forefront of pushing intergender good girls wrestling, their top girl, one of their top girls right now. She won Prince of the Deathmatch Mark. For everyone that like feels uncomfortable at IWA or saying too old, don't allow their fans to say what they want. They still push girls wrestling as much as they can, try to like still be progressive.
Yeah, and he's always been a guy that, hey, you know what? I'll give you a spot. I can earn past that. And so when he's bringing in competitors, you see a lot of people because, hey, you've got a chance. Come show me what you got. Let's see if you stick. And if you're a girl and you get that shot, you stick, keep you around. And he's going to push you, and he's going to show the people what you can. And there's plenty of guys who go in there and get a match, and then they're never seen again. And I'm sure plenty of girls too, but he's a guy who's going to say, you know what? You're a new up-and-coming talent. Somebody told me you'd do it. Let's see you come in.
That's one thing I love about Ian. He's always willing to – he's brutally honest up front with everybody. I think that upsets because they're not used to hearing honest now or a lot of
– Yeah, well, everybody, they're great, and they don't need any help, you know? Even little things, everybody could use help with things. And there's little things you don't even realize you're doing. And to have somebody enjoy that, here's one thing I noticed. Or, you know, asking you, hey, why'd you put that there? I see so many guys get offended by, you know, veterans or trainers, promoters coming up to them and asking any questions doing. And it's like, hey, man, don't be afraid to take a little criticism. They've seen everything. You know, if I've seen 10,000 matches, they've probably seen 40,000. There's nothing wrong with listening to say.
Do you feel like that there are some people that are not, I'm not going to say like too stuck in the past, but too stuck on what worked 25 years ago doesn't always work as well to, or kind of like.
I think there's a confusion about go away. I see plenty of you can go out there, do bad stuff and still work credible spots and, you know, be able to sell and work with their opponent. But, you know, you still see guys who are kind of stuck. They're like, well, I'm getting a reaction. Is it the reaction because they think you're a bad guy or because they want them anything they're interested in and they know how it's going
to. So I've got to ask about the picture, Ashton Starr, were you waterboarding him with a beer? Are you the heel in that situation?
So it's a pretty interesting situation with me and him.
It just popped into my head about like the wrong kind of heat or good kind. I just like, that was something that popped in my head when you were describing
it. To me, the story with me and Ashton kind of started, we did a show in Rhode Island. To me, it's been, I've seen Ashton come out of his shell a lot, and he's typically wrestled a lot of women's wrestling. And I think in some situations he's been put in a box where, okay, we got a gay black guy, let's have him fight the women. And I'm sorting him out of that box. And I think that's, you can tell interests in wrestling that aren't necessarily black and white. There can be some gray. And so I want to push Ashton. And I see him talking a lot, and I saying, oh, I'm so great. I'm the diva. Well, then come prove it to me. Come put it in front of me. And it's a story that isn't told all the time because it's two LGBT outperformers. And it's me saying, you're talking a lot, but I'm doing it better. So come prove to me you're the best. And so far, I've got two victories. But watching him in that match, I'm seeing something out of him that I hadn't, where I felt like for a while he kind of boxed in his set. And now he's sort of going. So in that match, yeah, I'm mocking it. And I'm coming from a position of, I haven't been doing this that much longer than, but look what I'm out here accomplished. You better step it up. You can't sit here in these gimmick matches forever. And right. He really is stepping up. Our first match, you know, I really, if you really watch how I work, and I do a lot of gimmick matches, I do a lot of big specimens that are kind of crazy. If you really watch how I work, dude, I work old school.
Right.
You know, I'll throw some flashy here or there, but I'm not afraid to just grab a hold. I'm not afraid to just hit a suplex. It's not something where I have to 16 under, duck seven lines, go to a knee pile driver, 17 false finishes. I'm not interested. That to me is not the style that's going to be invested. Yeah, man, you did a cool move. That's cool. I want to show Ashton. And so when I had him on the ropes, my valet at PUX, she knows I typically go for that beer. So I wasn't even, she just started walking up to me with someone's half drunk beer. And I said, you know what? Guantanamo Bay is, and I waterboarded his ass with a beer.
So is that, if you could get into that situation, is that something you would do with Cisco Chiazzo after that y'all had, what, a month ago now?
What? Okay. What do you know about that? What have you heard? What have you heard?
Okay. So, I got to tell, like, I've known Frankie for a little while. I met him 5 years in Orlando. We became friends. We tagged for a little while. So we talked, and I got a text from him that basically said the whole locker room threatened to beat his ass. He beat the hell out of you because I don't know if it's a jealousy thing or what it was, but basically it turned into a shoot because neither one of you wanted to work with the other one. You were putting that, and it was supposed to be an angle, and now he's saying it's not an angle. So that's so, kind of what I'm add on.
And I'll try. So basically, Trevin, like, hey, we want, and I've known about Frank. I mean, I didn't wrestle years ago when I was even training, and I remember White Trash Fred talking about, oh, Francisco Chiazzo, he's in Florida. He's incredible. I'd seen him around. We've never even been booked on the same. And everybody kept coming up to me when Trevin told me this match and was, oh, like, why with Frankie? Like, what is that about? Like, he's in a match. He won't work with you. He thinks he's hot shit. He's the trainer there, whatever, whatever. I don't give a shit. I work with it. Let's have a match. So when I got there, I was like, hey, man, you know, Effie, nice to meet you, whatever. And I was like, you know, do you have anything specific you want to do tonight? He was like, we're calling it. I was like, all right, that's fine. I think a lot of guys get nervous with that shit.
Okay.
I'll call a match in the ring with you. That's cool. So everybody went out and had their match. I literally did not even get before he started throwing punches in the head. Not like wrestling, just like you can watch it on the video, like throwing chunkers at the back of my head. And okay. I was like, oh, okay. So this, we're running this.
He was laying shit in from the beginning.
Yeah, literally the moment I'm in my shirt, not even a wrestling. So
okay.
My first thought is, oh, just getting set up. That's fine. Obviously, he's the trainer there. He's the WWN trainer. Why the fuck you would just start shooting on somebody, I don't know. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, we're probably just getting some early heat. I'll sell for him. That's cool. But did not stop. Just kept coming. And I'm in the back of my head, as much as I can think, I'm going, okay, this is streamed live. This is recorded. Like, Trevin's right there. Sapolsky somewhere. What the fuck is going on? So I'm trying to just sell and be, and that's cool and great. Just keeps throwing punches, keeps screaming at me. And I was like, fuck this. So you can see in a few parts, I don't even think the thing lasted 5 minutes, where I'm trying to just grab a hold, just like get a little air out of him, calm him down. His cardio is not, you can fucking see.
Right.
You know, I think I alligator, but I'm even up. And I know Frank Gaston is the ref out there. I was like, what is going on? I was like, back him up. Because Okay. Honestly, at this point, I've got bookings, man. I'm not booked at one place. I got place to go. I don't need people fucking with me. And, you know, at that point, I guess he cooled off a little bit, pulled off, and I was the fuck out of there. And he starts talking about fucking Twinkle Toes, Rainbow Boy, you know, started naming other people in the locker room, which I'm not going to bring them, really uncomfortable about the whole thing.
Yeah, he mentioned that someone else in the locker room.
It was shitty, is what it was. And I was fucking embarrassed for him, and everybody else was, because that's the dumbest fucking thing you can do, especially when you're supposed to be somebody who trains and helps, and that's what the fuck you're going to do. And I don't know what I don't really give a shit what his reasons are. It's embarrassing. And I don't know if he's trying to generate a little heat for his fucking, here's my old buddies versus guys who can draw a show. But I mean, it's embarrassing. And, you know, for a company like WWN that prides itself on being, oh, you know, we're the up and coming, we're evolved, we're all this, we have NXT connections, to have your fucking trainer out there trying to shoot on somebody who's just coming in to work a shitty match and was happy to give you your spots and happy to do your fucking shit. And it's not contracted with the fucking, and it's not paid enough to, it's embarrassing and it sucks.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't, do you think it has anything to do with like a jealousy thing? Because how long have you been wrestling? Like,
I've been wrestling 4 years. I had my first match 4 years.
Okay. And he's been wrestling, longer
what,
than
35.
I don't think it's quite that long.
I mean,
long,
what do they say? Can't do, is that what it is? What the fuck is he teaching?
I mean,
And it's one of those things where everybody talks and everybody has their he's kind of shit. Frankie doesn't want to work with. Frankie's too old school. Frankie's not going to call anything. Not going to get anything. Whatever, whatever. I don't give a. I've worked with plenty of old school. I've worked with fucking the golden boy Chick Donovan, who's 78 years old, or he can take chops and gets thrown out of the ring. You know, that's fine with me. I can work with an old guy. I can. It's fun. But to have an opportunity, he shouldn't be booked on FIP because that's an up and coming. And for him to take that and take that from and not even give me the moment to say, okay, we got, you know, so many people watching this live stream. They're going to watch it on Club WWE and whatever their deal is.
So,
and to take that from me, driving 4.5 hours in front of 65 fucking people, driving 4.5 hours back afterward, my head hurt, knowing that this is how I make, knowing something that I do all the time. How fucking dare you?
Well, I mean, so I'm not going to justify what he did because I'm not really sure why he did it. But I think when he started, it was a lot different, and it was like it was a thing to where like all the young guys would get their ass beat to see if they would stick around. Do you think he would? Maybe he was doing it was something along those lines,
but,
or it was like,
but that's done, man. But that's done. This isn't. We're not over at fucking. We're not in the whole fucking time. You work for the most legitimate company that works with the WWE, that works with the fucking corporate gig, and you're still dicking on somebody in the ring trying to prove how tough you are. Like, dude, fuck you. I do this enough during the week, and I do this enough during the month where I don't have to. I'm tough as nails, but I'm not going to sit here and fucking sit to your level and dick around in a shoot fight. I don't want to do it. I'm a professional wrestler. I'm a sports entertainer. I'll say it. Nobody likes that word, dude.
So, okay, but y'all still have a match coming up in, like, what, on the
– Yeah, they fucking booked a hardcore match, dude. They booked a hardcore match.
Oh, I didn't know that
you
was –
Do you think I'm
going
to let that go over? So, and this now sounds like an angle. It's hilarious. It's hilarious that he's gotten me in where this sounds like we're fucking selling a match. I don't give a fuck. I literally don't. I'm showing up there. I'm bringing weapons, bringing a chair. I'm going to put him out. I'm going to sit his ass down. I'm going to flick his wife off, and I'm going to drive to Charlotte because I have a real match with MJ. I'm going to PWX to a promotion that doesn't fucking put their athlete into a situation where they have to dick around with somebody who wants to see how tough I am. Who gives a shit? Nobody paid the fucking admission price to see how fucking tough I am. They paid to see me wrestle. They paid to look. They definitely didn't pay. God damn it. Look at the rest of that card. Nobody paid to get in the building to see fucking Fikiatso. Maybe 35 years ago, but not that night, bitch. I'm sorry. I'm fucking here. Can we finish this later? I can't do it right now.
Just,
God, I'm fucking done.
Real quick, we'll end it. If you'll just throw out a couple of plugs, your how they can people can follow you, and then
at
we
Kill
can
Kill Effie, because these motherfuckers are too. At Kill Effie, at Kill Effie.
All right, I appreciate you a lot.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening. Before you go, do me a big favor. Jump over to Twitter, give me a follow at Mr. Watch the Left. That's MR for Mr. Watch the Left. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or hate mail you want to send me, do it there or my regular email at bookericnow@gmail.com.